Good. Now I know where I am. I'm a human being. I make mistakes. I could be wrong. That's a bit important this morning. Going to do two sessions on church as community. This one today is going to look at the church, the really big picture, the church universal, all 2 billion of us, how we function as a community, how we should function as a community, that kind of stuff. So it's super big picture stuff. And then the next time I speak, which will be on the 24th of September, we'll talk about church as community in the much smaller sense. How do we function as a community? How does a community of a local community? The practical aspects of that. But today, the big picture, how do 2 billion people, probably plus, who are split into tens of thousands of different denominations and probably millions of churches, how do we function as a community? Question I always ask, what did Jesus say? Yet again, the answer is apparently nothing. That is, after considerable research, I couldn't come up with anything which he clearly said about how people function as community. He spent a lot of time talking about how people should treat each other, and we'll be looking at that in a bit, but I don't know if I'd come across anything which he said where he actually said, "This, when you get together, this is how you organise yourselves." He certainly didn't say how many hymns or prayers you should have or what prayers you should have apart from the Lord's Prayer. He didn't give us any guidelines as to how we should arrange our meetings or whether, in fact, we should even have meetings. Even the instructions which we have of him giving about the Lord's Supper are possibly subject to some debate. They turn up in some Gospels and not in others. Sorry, they turn up in one Gospel and not in others. But that's not the point of it today. I've got one. I'm not saying this is why Jesus decided not to say anything about how we organise ourselves, because I never try to make, you know, if there's an absence of something there, I never try to say, oh, this is why God did it or this is why Jesus didn't do it. One of the effects of the absence, I think, is to do with is cultures. I think that Jesus really understood how culture works, and at that time, some of the Greek philosophers had talked a bit about how people operate in groups and how they develop cultures, but not much. It didn't really happen until the 18th century, 19th century, that the word sociology got invented in the early 1900s, and early 1800s rather. So we didn't really think about how we function in groups much up until that time. Jesus understood cultures, and he understood that cultures vary, not just from place to place, but also from time to time. Therefore, he left the door open for people in different cultures, in different places, and at different times to organise themselves in ways that were appropriate for them. I think we all understand that these days. We're sophisticated 21st century educated people. And the trouble is that over the history of the church, people have not understood this. And when people have, in the big missionary time of the 19th century, people weren't just going out there and saying, this is what Jesus said. They were going out there and saying, this is what Jesus said, and this is how you should organise yourselves in churches. So we had churches dotted across the world, which looked like, if it was an English Anglican missionary, looked like English Anglican churches doing church in English Anglican ways. And if you were a Catholic missionary, then the churches you planted looked a lot like Spanish or Portuguese Catholic churches, including the way the actual outside of the church looked. And if you were Methodist, exactly the same thing. And as we've discussed before, the missionaries really started to realise that there was a major problem here, and started saying, we need to, when we're going out, we need to be able to put some kind of a coherent view forward. And that actually started things like the ecumenical movement and the World Council of Churches. incidentally, there'd be, I'm sure there's going to be one or two things I'm going to be saying this morning which you've heard before. Some of you will have heard before. As I always say, it's not repetition, it's reinforcement, and it's good. If you just happen to think, hang on, I've heard that before, then that means it's really important. How do we live in a community of 2 billion people? What are we supposed to do in a community of 2 billion people? How is that possibly going to work? we don't have teachings from Jesus or from other people about how that is going to work. Well, yeah, I think we do. Here's one from Paul. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up. That's good advice for a small group, but I think it's probably a good advice for 2 billion people to look at each other and say, how can we encourage each other? How can we build each other up? That's difficult. I know that's difficult, and we'll be coming on and looking at it in a bit more detail later on. I've got some suggestions about how we actually do that. Jesus, of course, also said a number of things which are relevant to this. A new command I give you, love one another. As I has loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. How on earth can we do that with 2 billion people? The answer is that we can't. The answer is that we love the people that Jesus leads us to day by day, be that at work or at church or on the internet. We meet people, we interact with people, we talk with people, we talk about how our experiences of God, and in that way we change the person that we're talking to. It's inevitable. Whenever you have a conversation with somebody or about almost anything, you are either reinforcing their ideas or you're challenging their ideas, and they're doing exactly the same thing to you. So we share what we experience of God with other people, with other Christians. We bounce ideas around, even if we're in very, very different places. And hopefully good things happen. Sometimes not so good things happen. Here's another clue that Jesus gave us. So in everything do to others what you would have them do to you, for this sums up the law and the prophets. Treat other people the way you'd like to be treated yourself. Probably the simplest and most wonderful thing that Jesus ever said. For me it is. And he says, for this sums up the law and the prophets. The law, the Jewish law, which in Jesus' day was the law that you were supposed to keep, consisted of over 600 separate laws. You were supposed to keep all 600 of them, and some people really went out of their way to keep 600 laws. Jesus turns up and he says, treat other people the way you'd like to be treated yourself. That sums up all of those 600 laws. And you think that everybody would say, wow, thanks, that's fantastic. Now we understand that isn't quite what happened, as we know. Why weren't they more grateful? Okay, so put it simply, I'm supposed to treat other people the way that I'd like to be treated myself. So what do I like? How do I like people to treat me? This is just personal. I like to be treated with affection. I like to be treated with good humour. I like to be treated with respect. And I like people to listen to what I have to say. Does that sound reasonably okay? Your list might be different. One thing I think that is really important about this is we are not called to show these things. We're not called to demonstrate these things. These things should be coming out of our heart. So our affection for our children isn't something which we show or demonstrate. Our affection for our children is something which the physical things that we do, which show that we have affection for our children, flows out of our love for them. And it should be the affection and the good humour and respect and listening to other people should flow out of what God's doing in our lives. So our affection for them, for other people, should be not something which we demonstrate. It's not something which we say, this is nice. I've used this illustration before, I know I have, but probably many of you remember about 7 years ago, it was 7 years ago, I had a really nasty encounter with cancer. Completely out of the blue. I was astonished, and I remember standing up here and talking about it in everybody's faces. People say all sorts of things to you when you're in that kind of a situation, but one I particularly remember was Luke. Luke wasn't around at the church when this happened. He must have been on holiday or something, and he obviously wasn't reading his emails either, because the first time he came to church, he came bouncing across the grass there, saw me, great big grin on his face. Hi, Peter, how are you? You know, it's what you say. And I had to tell him how I was and what the experts were saying, and things weren't looking good at that stage in the proceedings, and he just stared at me, and his face sort of fell, and the expression in his eyes changed, and when I'd finished what I was trying to say, he said, I don't know what to say. And that was absolutely perfect as far as I could, I knew that he cared. I'm tearing up thinking about it. As I'm saying, these things aren't things which we demonstrate, they aren't things that we do, they are things which flow out from our affection for others. Another thing I think which is important here, take respect as an example. Respect is not just something which you show to somebody when you're talking to them or when you're actually with them. That's with all of these things, I think this is true. Affection, good humour, respect, perhaps not listening, is something. If you respect somebody, then that respect for them will show when you are talking about them as well as when you are talking to them. Are you with me? It's not just something which you show when you're actually talking to them. If you truly respect somebody, if you truly love somebody, if you have affection for somebody, then that will show when you're talking about them, when you're in other people's company. If you're involved in gossip, if you're running somebody down, which in a way which you wouldn't do when you were face to face, then there's an issue there. Respect is something which should be shown to somebody when you're talking about them, not just when you're talking to them. And listening is very important. I'm not good at it. It's funny, I've got a degree in social work, of all things, and yet I'm not a very good listener, and I know I'm not a very good listener. I know there's at least two people here this morning who would, if you went round, would agree strongly and say, yes, Peter is not a great listener. Sorry? And there's another one as well, yes, yes. Yes, no. Absolutely, Tony was one of those two. No. If you want the full story, ask Tony afterwards. Listening is extremely important, and in the context, I think, of what I'm talking about here, of talking about the big picture and the 2 billion and people from other denominations and that kind of thing, listening to people who go to other denominations is extremely important if we're going to do something about turning our universal church into a community. And this is really what I'm talking about this morning. How do we do that? And listening is probably the most important thing, because it's very easy when we meet Christians of other persuasions to start telling them where they're wrong. I find this incredibly easy to do, to tell other people where they're wrong. This is not what it's all about, and we will come back to that in a moment. How do we listen to Christians in other denominations? We're going to have a little time now of silent reflection and listening to God just for a minute or two. And then we're going to do something else. But just what I've said so far, just reflect on that. Ask yourself what it means for you. Pray, ask God to speak to you about it. And we'll come back in a minute or two. Okay. I just need to explain what we're going to do now. We're just going to ask for people to speak about what they think about this, what's just been happening for them. But slightly unusually, I would ask you to put your hands up. And have you got the mic? You have, yeah. Put your hands up if there's something you want to say. And please don't be offended if I don't do you in the order in which you put your hands up. There is a method to my madness, which at the moment only Rose and I know about. Is there anybody who would like to comment on... Anyone else? Okay, Tyson.
The thing that came to my mind was when we're listening to other people and when other people are listening to us, we can disagree very easily on things that we believe, but we can't disagree on each other's experiences of God, and we can't argue that that wasn't invalid or that wasn't God or whatever. That was their experience. And I think trying to get everyone to agree on the things we believe is probably foolhardy, I would say, a bit stupid. Yep. Whereas actually understanding that we each have an experience of God and to respect that and to embrace that and to celebrate that, I think is probably a place to start.
Yeah, good. Anyone else? Michael.
Building on that thought for me, I was thinking about listening. Very similar thought, Tyson, is my experience is that the least important thing to talk about is what I believe. And this is coming from my journey with Parker Palmer. The Quaker idea that the purpose of community is to support each other to learn to listen to our own inner teacher, translated to me, spirit. My experience, whether someone is a Christian or not, I guess theologically I believe the spirit is alive and well at work in the world. And every human being has some experience of listening to their inner teacher or their inner voice. So I find great richness in creating the space where I don't try and impose what people believe, but ask questions that go to their inner experience of God, the supernatural, what gives their life meaning. And that leads to rich conversations and both of us growing.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you. Anyone else? Jen?
I'm just wondering about the idea that these things always flow from the heart, and wondering whether sometimes they're a discipline that we choose to treat people like that when perhaps our heart would not be quite ready to do so.
John?
I'm reminded that George Fox advised his followers to walk cheerfully across the world answering that of God in everyone.
Asking or answering?
Well, he said answering, but I think he meant responding to that of God in everyone.
Yeah, good. Yes. Well, I think we should always be expecting God to speak to us through others. Yep. Anyone else? Trish?
I think listening is an act of humility. And in our culture, that's not really encouraged. We're encouraged to put ourselves forward, which means do all the talking.
Anyone else? We'll move on then. I've got a, I've got a thing about denominations and denominationalism at the moment, and I think this is something that God is really laying on my heart. I know I've talked about it a fair bit. I think that the divisions between churches and denominations are actually doing real harm to the Christian message, to the coming of the kingdom. I can see these things breaking down. But I think God is actually calling me, calling us to do something about it, which is what I want to talk about. I want to talk about three supernatural experiences I've had. It's embarrassing having supernatural experiences because some people just don't have them. It's embarrassing having supernatural experiences and talking about them. I don't like to talk about them, but I just want to talk about three things that have happened to me which are in this kind of zone of what I'm talking about, of denominationalism and the damage that that's doing and what we can actually do about it. The first one of these, about 2 years ago, I did something which I do occasionally, not very often, which is take myself off to a pub for lunch. Just to have lunch and have a few beers with myself, sometimes with other people, but sometimes occasionally just with myself. This was one of these occasions. I had had a reasonable lunch and at least 2 pints of Old Speckled Hen. I remember what I was drinking that day. And I was wandering back. That was at the Moon and Sixpence, now closed, unfortunately. I'm digressing. I was wandering back through town on my way to the underground, Perth Underground station to get a train. And God just said to me, go and sit down on that bench. But nothing else to do. I went and sat down on the bench. I was feeling very mellow, or fairly mellow. On the other side, these back-to-back benches in Murray Street Mall and Hay Street Mall. On the other side of the bench, there was a group of young people, late teens, early 20s, very animated. I wasn't paying any attention to what they were talking about. But one of them came round the bench and said to me in an American accent, would it be okay if I spoke to you for a little while? So I, indicated that he should sit down next to me. And before he said anything, I said, which Christian group are you with? And he said, oh, have you heard of Youth with a Mission? Yes, I have heard of YWAM, yes, I said. And we had a conversation for 10, maybe 15 minutes, just basically talking about what our walk with God was like. And it was very, very good. And at the end of that, he invited me to come to a YWAM meeting, not to speak, just to come along and turn up there. And I knew nothing about YWAM in Perth. They meet in East Perth. They've got quite a big complex there. And I went along to their meeting, and it was unbelievable. There must have been, 300, 400, 500 young people, mostly young people, mostly under 30, certainly, having a tremendous time, praising God. The music was great. The sermon was actually pretty boring, but the actual atmosphere in there was so alive and so fantastic. And did I leave that feeling enervated? Sorry, that's the wrong word. Energized? Did I leave that meeting feeling, oh, this is great, this is wonderful? No. I left the meeting feeling really frustrated and very, very sad, because I was saying to myself, and because of the people I know at Vos as well, lots and lots of young people at Vos, I knew that across Perth there are dozens and dozens of churches with thousands and thousands of people in them, and most people just don't know that they're there. They're not making an impact on Perth. We are not making an impact on Perth. So I was frustrated and saddened by that, and that kicked me along this way of thinking, I think. The second supernatural experience, I have visions occasionally. I just do, whether they're an aspect of my ongoing relationship with God or whether I'm just nuts, I cannot say. But the emphasis, the evidence seems to be the former, that towards the end of last year, I wasn't in very good shape. I was finishing off my MDiv, and I was trying to finish off this huge assignment that I had to write to finish off the MDiv, and I was in a state of mild depression, which I get every now and again. And God said to me, I want to show you something. And I thought, oh, it's one of those visions, I'm really not interested at the moment, thank you. And whenever I prayed for the next couple of days, that same thing, I want to show you something. So eventually I said, yep, okay, lay it on me, God, basically. And immediately I was on top of the South Downs in southern England. I was wide awake, this isn't a dream. And I was looking out over the big, huge valley which between the North and the South Downs. But I was on the South Downs looking north. It was that precise. And it's England's green and pleasant land. You know, it's a patchwork of fields and little villages and towns and that kind of thing. And from that angle, you're actually looking down on it all. But in this vision, every little village, every little town had a church in it, and the churches were exploding. Nobody was getting hurt, but the churches, the walls were coming apart, the roofs were coming off, the steeples, some of them were flying into the air like little rockets. And the important thing is that all the people inside those churches were running out of the churches and running to the people who were coming out of other churches and embracing them. That's what the vision was. The message is quite clear, obviously, what this vision was for. I do hope it's going to happen. Not the actual exploding churches bit, you know, but the idea. Excuse me a second. Ah, there it is. So my conclusion in all in those two supernatural experiences is that we should be listening to other denominations. The third one, this was really weird, happened recently. About a year ago, Steve McKinnon and I got talking. He was saying that he was thinking about starting another church in Perth, to which my response was, we don't need another church in Perth. I mean, he meant actually in the city centre, in the CBD. So we disagreed on that. He thought we did need another church, and I say, no, we don't. We need to get churches talking to each other. Anyway, a couple of months ago, I was flicking through my Facebook things, and I saw something from Steve McKinnon saying that there was going to be a meeting about starting this new church in the city centre. And I wasn't too keen on getting involved in another church, but I made a mental note and I prayed, okay, God, if you want me to get involved in this, then remind me that there's meetings on. And lo and behold, the night before, I'd made a little mental note of the date, suddenly realised, oh, it's tomorrow. Yes, I have remembered it. I'd better go along. Couldn't find any record of this email or Facebook thing anywhere. So I rang Steve up and said, where's this meeting tomorrow? I've lost the details of it. Steve said, I've got absolutely no idea what you're talking about. I said, this church that you're starting in the city centre, that stuff, you know, we were talking about it. He said, yeah, I know we were talking about it, but I've done absolutely nothing about it. I said, you haven't sent around a Facebook thing? He said, no, nothing. And I thought this was one of my vivid dreams that I have, because I do have very vivid dreams sometimes. As Lindy will tell you, she's gone. Oh, never mind. That's really not important. But it was embarrassing. So you might like to ask Lindy about it, and she'll tell you, and that'll be funny. Leave that on one side. About 3 weeks later, I was flipping through my emails, through my Facebook notifications again. You know, when you've got dozens and dozens of them, when you've got hundreds of Facebook friends like me, you have to go through them like that. And there it was. There's a church meeting at a place called The Platform in Perth, and Steve's name was on it, and it even had an email address that you could get more information. And so I thought, oh, yeah, okay, well, then suddenly I thought, hang on, he would have told me. And I rang him up, and he said, no, I'm not doing anything. It's nothing to, I don't know anything about it. And I said, well, what, it says it's being held at a place called The Platform, which I've never heard of. And Steve said, oh, I know where The Platform is. It's in Adelaide Terrace. And I said, well, what's going on? And he said, I don't know. I remembered after this that I could actually remember that the email address was info@bethechurch.org.au. And I checked it out. And there is a church called Be The Church, and it meets in Scarborough. And they were starting to do starting a daughter church in Perth at The Platform. So this had really happened, and I'd got Steve McKinnon's name attached to it somehow or other in my head. But I thought, well, maybe God's saying something to me. I better go along and see what this church is all about. So I did. I've actually been there a couple of times. And it's not my kind of church. It's not at all my kind of church. But I thought, no, my job here is to go and just listen to what people are saying about their church. I don't think we need more churches in Perth. It's fairly charismatic. Miraculous healings and those sort of things happen. I have visions, but miraculous healings give me a bit of a worry. Does that sound hypocritical? There is nobody in that church that I've ever met before. There's probably 40 or 50 people. And again, I was struck by this sense of these people are in this group, we're in that group, these people are in another group. There is no communication going on between us. We're not listening to each other. Excuse me. Now, that's interesting. The next slide is exactly the same as that slide. The notes are exactly the same too. Okay, that's just a mistake. Right. The plan. The plan is visiting other churches. The plan is going and being not being part of other churches necessarily, but visiting other churches. The plan is that we encourage Christians to visit other churches, that we ourselves, I myself, visit other churches and just listen. The plan is possibly that there would be groups of people from different churches meeting together in order to listen to each other and to listen to God. It's not going to be for, the purpose is not proselytizing at all. The purpose is not for me to say, oh, we do this in our church, isn't that great? Although inevitably people ask you, you know, about your church, what kind of thing it is. It is really difficult to do that, I find. Christians disagree. I'm firmly convinced that God actually wants us to disagree, because this is how we show our love for each other, that we love each other despite the fact that we disagree. We're running out of time. Members of a nuclear family disagree with each other. I don't know if you've noticed that. Maybe your families aren't like my families, but members of a nuclear family disagree with each other, but they are bound together by the fact that they are members of the same family. They have to put up with each other ultimately. Okay, sometimes they don't, but you know, ideally, yes, they do. And I think that's the situation we're in. It's difficult for me. As some of you know, I have an online activity where, through process which I can only assume that God was guiding, I wound up in a discussion group with a group of very conservative evangelical Christians, most of whom are in the United States of America. And we have had some ding-dongs. Someone this week, most of the ding-dongs that we have are discussions about the doctrine of inspiration of the Bible and inerrancy of the Bible. And one of them this week said to me in a post, he said, "In the name of Jesus," was how he started it, "I am telling you that the Spirit that convinces you of these things is going to leave you, and that a close friend will tell you about this." In the name of Jesus, he was telling me that a lot of them believe that I have an evil spirit because I don't totally agree with them on the issue of inerrancy, particularly. Supposing I'm wrong. Every time I stand up, I put up a little sign which says I could be wrong. Supposing this guy is right, and I'm actually wrong about these things. If what I'm talking about is actually really in my heart, then I have to say, hey, I could be wrong about that. I could be wrong about just about everything. And I need to listen to people who have a different point of view. We have... Do we have any time? 5 minutes. Okay, we've got 5 minutes. Same thing as before. If you've got something to say, would you put your hand up and not be offended if I don't immediately say, okay. Anyone? No one. How exciting. Anyone else? Yes, I know. There is a method in my madness, promise you. Yeah. Trish? Come and ask me afterwards why I'm doing it this way. I'll explain.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. You've actually got me thinking for some time talking about denominations. I've come to the conclusion that denominations are man-made vessels that hold parts of the church, but they are not the church. And some bits of the church are in these vessels and some bits of the church aren't. And when you started talking this morning, I had an interesting vision of a whole lot of jars all over the place. Some, they were like the old-fashioned wine jars. And some were solid and impermeable. And some had doors in them and some had windows in them. And some of them were completely permeable and things were floating in and out of them.
Welcome to the wonderful world of, yeah. Anyone else? No? Yeah, I know. I can see you. I can see you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, John.
My sense of people here is that they're refugees from other denominations.
Yep.
And maybe the thought of going to other denominational meetings mightn't be overly attractive because we've made a certain choice. I know what I'll get if I go to the Mount Hawthorn Baptist Church. You know, I know what I'll get if I go to a Church of Christ. I know what I'll get. I don't, other than forming relationships and dialogue, I don't know. I believe within this fellowship here we have so much difference anyway. This difference is enough for me. And hopefully it is helping me grow and develop as a Christian. So unless you're feeling, I'm just wondering what is... I would sense that most people would have a great deal of love for people who are thinking differently denominationally from here. I'm wondering what your overall purpose is that you're thinking of visiting other denominations. What's the plan? What's the outcome you're looking for?
I don't know. I'm always interested in the next step. I don't know what will have it, but I am absolutely certain that in spending time actually just talking and particularly listening to people from other denominations, we are going to help break down the barriers. And I'm also convinced that this is going to happen if it happens among the laity, the people who sit in the pews, ecumenical councils, the word council of churches, or groups which are composed of the heads of churches is not what this is about. It's about recognising that other people are my brother and sister, and communicating at that level. Did that answer your question?
Well, it's your answer. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This idea, you know, if people are actually interested in following this up, then let's talk about it. But I'm not thinking for a moment that the whole church should be going out and visiting other churches. Oh, this is fun. Hang on a minute. Let me think about this. Rochelle.
Here and there, I am involved with other churches in various ways, whether that's through work or whatever. And there are aspects of many different denominations which I value, whether that's the Catholics, the Anglicans, the Salvation Army, the whatever. There's great bits which I've seen that they have, as there are great bits which I see we have. And for me, it's what I hear you saying. For myself, I see it as sort of building bridges and connections with people so that we become connected.
Yes.
Despite the fact we have differences and we will probably continue to be individual churches or whatever, there are the connections there that hopefully the world would see within that.
Absolutely. Who was... Was that there? John, you had a go? No? Michael?
I visit other churches from time to time for various reasons, and I enjoy doing that, and I, you know, enjoy meeting people with different ways of meeting together in the presence of God. I keep coming here because this is my family.
Yep.
I don't come here out of a commitment to this denomination of one congregation. I come here because this is my family, and this is the place I'm going to keep coming back to. But that doesn't in any way hold me back from visiting other churches. If I've got a reason to be somewhere else on a Sunday, I'll go without any reservation, because I enjoy that contact with other kinds of churches.
Good. I think we're wrapping it up.